You're listening to Social 545, where we discuss what's trending in social media and interview weekly guests. Now, here are your hosts, Saba Siddiqui and Carlos Gill.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Social 545. My name is Saba and I'm joined with my co-host today, Mr. Carlos Gill.
Hey, what's going on? For all of you listeners out there, welcome to another episode of Social 545. Really excited to record this episode because it's our first episode after South by Southwest, where Saba and I were out there rocking it. And joining us here on the show today is actually someone that's no stranger to South by Southwest. He likes to be known as a chief instigator. He's the CEO of Pure Matter. He's an author, TED speaker, and also someone that I like to call a friend. And he is none other than Brian Kramer. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, man. How are you doing? Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Doing great. So you were at South By, which was a little over a week ago. Are you fully recovered from the experience?
Yeah, I am. Are you?
You know what? I am now. It was rough those first couple days getting reacclimated to the real life and not going out every night and, you know, partying away. But it was nice to get back to falling asleep at 10 o'clock at night. I know, Saba, you can probably appreciate that as well.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. I went to San Francisco right after for a week and I came back and I've been sick since Sunday. So today is my first day back. So I'm excited to be back on the grind.
Right on, right on. So Brian, really excited to have you here on the show. We're going to talk, you know, a little bit about your books that you've come out with, you know, most recently Shareology, before that H2H. You know, we're going to talk a little Snapchat with you. But for those listeners that aren't as familiar with Brian Kramer, why don't you just go ahead and tell folks out there, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? To the people that don't know me, that's a great way to reinvent myself at this one moment. So who am I? I'm just a guy. I enjoy marketing. I'm a guy that likes marketing. I like to try out new things. I'm somewhat of an early adopter, and at the same time, I also love to connect with people. A lot of what I've done in my career has been around those two things. So I've been in the agency life my whole career. I've worked my way up through different agencies, working my way through different types of agencies, but my role has always been the same. Excuse me, which has been helping to bridge the challenges between the traditional advertising methods and digital marketing. It wasn't until really recently that social media actually came on the scene. When I say that, I mean like in the last 7 to 10 years. So social's somewhat new to my career. But my degree is actually in public relations. So when social media came along, it was a natural fit to the things that I had studied and what I had really, really enjoyed. So when social came along, it was kind of the perfect integration into, you know, what I believe could be the perfect mix for digital advertising, social, and public relations. So kind of fit perfectly into where we're at Pure Matter. And also at the same time, I know, Carlos, you mentioned that I was in a TED Talk. And the TED Talk that I gave really kind of hammers home the reason why I started doing social media, because it wasn't as much around just sharing and just getting out there, mm-hmm. As much as it was finding my way, because I was a little bit lost in how I was going to continue being the CEO of Pure Matter. I had successful, and I had managed to delegate everything off to the point where we were successful enough that I didn't feel like I was needed there anymore. And great clients, great employees, no problems. But anyway, I ended up trying social media to see if I could crack the code like we're all doing. In doing so, I managed to connect with a lot of great people, and that's really kind of the point of social media. You know, doing interviews like this, doing interviews on video, doing interviews over blogs, starting a blog, writing, all these great and wonderful things led to me delivering content, which then delivered value back to Pure Matter. And then I had my aha moment. I was creating value for Pure Matter again, and I wanted to stay. And so it changed my life and the course of my life at Pure Matter. And I went back and said, hey, now we've got something new we can deliver, and I'm having a great time. So, so here we are today. And out of that came the philosophy of connection between two or more people, which was that H2H philosophy.
So before we talk about H2H and obviously the book, you know, we want to get to that. You know, you run a very successful agency in Pure Matter that, you know, works with some very high profile clients, such as IBM. What for you would you say were some of the challenges as you were ramping up your agency?
What were not the challenges is actually an even better question, because there are so many. The challenges of growing an agency are almost similar to raising a child. It's like you go through the diaper stage, and then you go through the talking back stage, and then you go through having to get them to school on time. Every little step is a little incremental piece of success, and at the same time, a new level of challenges. You celebrate when you get to sleep in for the very first time because your kids are growing older, but at the same time, you know, their grades aren't as good, and so you have to face a new level of challenges, or something happens. The same thing with business, and the same thing especially when I was growing, or when Courtney and I were growing the agency. You know, we'd have all these wonderful, awesome successes, but with that came a new challenge that we had to face each and every time, which was, how do we create more growth? How do we scale? And we're in the people business. So, you know, this isn't a question of how do we sell more product, which is a whole different ball game. Great set of challenges that is a whole nother probably topic for your show. But the set of challenges that we're facing as a people business was, you really need to keep everyone somewhat happy, and you need to keep raising everybody's skill sets, and you need to be delivering value, because it is a consultative business. So you're delivering value to your client, and you have to hunt for business at the same time. So keeping business and hunting for business was probably the biggest challenge.
So you mentioned you guys are in the people business. So is that really where the, inspiration for H2H came about? Because it was a lot about, you know, the human side of communication and empathy and simplicity. So when did you decide that, you know, this would be the first book that I would come out with so that I can bring back value to Pure Matter?
H2H, the book kind of happened to me. I wish I was a great marketer who planned it better than what you just described. I planned Shareology. I did not plan on H2H. It was a surprise child. And what happened was, I was giving a keynote at Bloomberg. I'd been talking about the philosophy of there's no B2B or B2C. It's H2H, human to human, for about 7 years. I had this one slide that I was delivering, but it was embedded in the middle of a keynote, of a greater presentation. The keynote wasn't all about that, and it just so happened that one day at Bloomberg, it caught the attention of several people in the audience, and they raised their phones, took a picture of it, tweeted it out, and then in the next 48 hours, it got, I think, over 80 million impressions, over 15 languages. And it was translated in, and then over 2,000 bloggers wrote about it over the next 2 weeks. And that's what sprung forward into a book. I then took all those questions I was receiving and turned it into something that could be, of value. It could answer the question of what that meant.
Right. So what was one of the biggest challenges just writing the book? Was it you understanding the philosophy really behind why you were saying this as you were writing the book, or did it just kind of come to you right when you began?
The
solution of writing it, I guess.
Yeah, no, I was lucky enough that I had been writing about it I'd been blogging about it for the previous few years. So actually all I needed to do was just collect all of everything that I'd written and put it together. The book actually only took me 4 days to write. And the reason it took me four days is because I had it all written. I couldn't have written it that fast on my own. So I just collected everything that I'd written, which is a great reason to blog, because you never know when your blogs are going to turn into a book.
Yep.
But I took everything that I'd written, and that's it. It was perfect. I had been writing exactly about that same topic. And it was magical.
And I gotta say, it resonates with me, you know, not only because I've seen you speak several times now, Brian, but, you know, I've worked in social media marketing in both the B2C and B2B environment. And, you know, I use your line of there's no B2B, there's no B2C, it's H2H a lot of times now, because fundamentally everyone's a buyer out there, you know, whether someone is even in the market to buy something or not. Everyone's a buyer, and in social media, it's extremely important that as a marketer, especially, you know who your audience is, and you're reaching them on the right platforms in which they're engaging. You're putting the right type of content in front of them, because at the end of the day, whether someone's going to buy your consumer product, even if it's, you know, Starbucks coffee, or in my case at BMC Enterprise Software, you know, whatever side of the spectrum you fall on, our jobs as marketers is to engage the audience that we're trying to reach. And whether they buy from you today or tomorrow, everybody out there at some point will have a need to buy. So that's why I personally love and relate to what you wrote, Brian, and what you stand for behind H2H, because it's a complete game changer once you start to look at marketing from that lens.
Yeah, you're dead on. I mean, and here's the thing. What's fascinating to me is that your view of it is different than everyone else's view. Everyone has a different take on it. More so than even what I had originally intended. There's a hospital in India that reached out to me and said that they wanted to tagline their hospital human to human. Because they wanted to, and they did, and they wanted to make sure that their patient care was being received in a very personalized human way. And now I've been talking for the last few years to hospitals who are trying to adopt the human-to-human philosophy, but it has nothing to do with marketing, because they just patient care and insurance is getting so bad that they don't have time to actually deliver, you know, very personalized time. And, you know, doctors can only spend certain amount of time with you based upon what insurance will pay, and so they want to actually stay there and actually deliver care. I talked with somebody else who said, in HR, this is wonderful because now we can actually get customer support to connect with engineering better, because we can't get the two to talk. And so we're using H2H to say, hey, everyone needs to talk to each other. So it's kind of interesting how each perspective on human to human is being received.
That's interesting that you talk about that, because one of the things that Carlos and I always hear about Snapchat is, well, maybe our consumers are not on there, right? Our target demographic is not on there. A lot of people that are in the B2B business are saying, well, you know, the 40-year-olds or 50-year-olds are not on there. And our answer to them is always, well, they're humans, right? They're people. People are consuming content, and they're consuming content in a place that is the most interesting to them. And right now we've seen with all the stats that the attention, a lot of it is on Snapchat, and it's moving towards that, and the skew is going higher and higher. And so I know that you've mentioned that you've been on Snapchat for about a year now. So what is your take on the human-to-human interaction? Because the interaction is done in a more intimate way than other social platforms are. And how do you think that affects the growth of Snapchat and the way that people want to engage with each other?
Well, so let me tell you why I originally got on Snapchat. It had actually nothing to do with marketing and had everything to do with my daughter. She was on Snapchat and she was showing it to me, and I thought it was just really cool. And I try to communicate and engage with her and my son on the platforms that they're on. Now, you know, obviously people of our age range are on it as well, but that's just how I first learned about it. But anyway, that was really fascinating to me because I started to snap her. She and I would snap back and forth. And I, as you guys know, I travel a lot and I can't get her to text me back. She just won't text. And I think kids are just like – she definitely won't email me back. And I can't call her because kids don't like to be on the phone. So I'm trying to communicate with my daughter while I'm traveling. And I found out that she'll snap me back. And so now we snap each other. And it's just that one little moment in the day that just makes my whole day. So now I've also learned that the only way that I can get her down to for dinner is to snap a picture of dinner. If I call for her, she won't come down. Or if I yell or text her, she won't come down for dinner. But if I snap it, it's like 30 seconds later, she appears. So it's kind of interesting that you know, they've all adopted this this platform. And I think it really speaks to the level of control, right? You can be free to share your information and not worry about what somebody else is going to think, say, or do, because it's not as trolled a platform as, let's say, Twitter or Periscope is, because you're if you don't connect with somebody, they can't respond back to you, and B, it disappears. So everything that you're doing is it feels more secure, at least to me, than the other platforms are out there, and also it kind of separates you from the people that you, maybe perhaps your parents, if you were my daughter. Like, now I'm social, so maybe she's accepted me into the circle, but it's a great platform for being unique and independent, I think.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that with snapping your daughter for dinner, because my wife actually does that with me as well. you know, staying on that, you know, along those lines, a lot of people, they look at Snapchat as a storytelling app, which granted it is. However, at the core, I like where you're going with this messaging. You know, I look at it as a messaging app as well. And where I'm going with this is most people that I've been connected with for years on social media, we didn't really have conversations on social until Snapchat rolled around. And why was it? Because now we can see each other. We can send each other a quick video snap. And where I was drawn in by Snapchat, you know, initially was because I can see when someone's opened up my content. I used to use Twitter DM a lot to engage with folks out there. And once I started to see, I can have the same conversations through direct message on Snap, but I can see when someone opens that. And Saba and I have joked around a lot because, you know, we work together in the podcast. We have a Snapchat training course together. So when I need to get a hold of Saba, I'll send her a snap and she'll do the same with me. And I can actually see, all right, Saba's seen my snap and now she hasn't responded. Now I'm going to follow up with a not so nice text message. Right, Saba?
I always respond. But no, it's interesting that he first brought it up as more of a communication tool, because I got on Snapchat on 2011. I'm probably much closer to your daughter's age than I am either of you. So it makes sense. And people were always asking me, oh, well, what were you doing on there in 2011? I said, sending mass photos of the dress I wanted to wear to an event to all my friends, because it was the easiest way for us to communicate, right? You only need that 10 seconds of their attention to really get the message across. And so as a communication platform, for some reason, the way that they've built it is very effective. And so now, once the stories have kind of become integrated, now we're talking about storytelling, marketers are getting ideas with the custom filters, but originally it was a communication tool. And I like that you kind of brought that up and you didn't get on it to sort of say, oh, you know, let me just experiment with it. Because I think a lot of people always forget, you know, what Snapchat is really good at. And like Carlos mentioned, it's to really connect with people and to engage.
Yeah, I think, you know, every platform should be used as an H2H platform first and foremost. If you're using it as a broadcasting tool or in any other way, then you're misusing every tool out there. But the other thing I'd say though about Snapchat and this would be more my my debate on it and where Snapchat needs to grow, is it's very personal brand centric. It's not very business centric. And it's great for people to connect with other people. It's great for people to build their own brands on it. But if you were to be a brand itself, you would have to pay $100,000 a day to really utilize the platform at the level that they're providing. If you're a person within that brand that wants to evangelize the brand, then that changes the game. Now you can use it as a personal branding tool. So where that's different than Twitter or Facebook, because you can create brand pages for free and create communication on those pages. Now there is a little bit of pay to play in some areas, but on the most part, you can create a lot of different branding and awareness campaigns, and then you have the metrics and the tools as marketers to be able to reflect back to your team or your executives and show how the platform's working. I don't think that, in my opinion, I'd love to hear what you guys think, Snapchat is there yet for the brands to be able to do that. And maybe it's not part of their goal. Maybe their goal is to just be very specific and take on the 10 channels they've got on the brand channels and just make their 100 grand a day. Maybe their overlays will start helping that a little bit, and they'll make some incremental money, but that's not where they're going to make all their money. So anyway, the metrics and the branding for corporations, I think, is going to have to grow if they want to see it grow into the business sector.
So one of the things that I think is interesting about Snapchat is that they did provide this divide, right? So they said that, okay, here are your friends that you follow with your handles, and here are all the brand channels. Here are the six-figure companies, or the companies that are paying us six figures, so they can have their content produced on Snapchat. Now, the issue is that people decided, we don't want to watch that produced content, right? So what they did is they stuck that in between your story as well as your friends' content. Mm-hmm. And then what we saw is that brands said, you know what? We're not going to pay for that. What we're going to do instead is we're going to just buy our handle. We're going to ask someone on internally to just create content, right? Because as we know, Snapchat is very content-centric. And so you have to be creating content within a 24-hour span every single day for you to be relevant, right? For you to be even consumable. So I think it's interesting because at the end of the day, I think Snapchat, it makes it more human, because if you want to be a brand on Snapchat, you have to have a handle and you have to be in the list right next to that person's best friend. And that's how you're being consumed. And I say this because I follow a lot of brands like Sephora, Tarte Cosmetics, Apple Music that are not in those brand channels. They're not paying six figures. What they're doing is they're actually saying, we're going to invest every day in making content and we're going to put ourselves on the level of all of your other friends. And if our content is good enough for you to click, please click. Otherwise, we've lost and we have to try harder. So I kind of want to know your take on, is there any brands that you follow, just their handles, or if you think that model will work in the long run at scale?
I don't. I'm now looking through my list. You got me thinking here. I don't think that I follow. Yeah, I follow Applebee's. But you know what? I don't click on them. I click on the people first. Mm-hmm. I'm way more interested in what you two are doing than what Applebee's is doing, if I had to go in order of importance, because I think it's going to be a little more real, a little more interesting. So maybe to your point, they're going to have to be more human if they want to catch my attention and make me want to click, which is rare.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing that it forces companies to do, because it forces them to be more human. It forces them to more authentically try to engage with us and create content. So I think that in the long run, I think social is getting smarter, right? Social is getting more robust, and consumers are having higher expectations for what type of content, right? So consumers know when an influencer is getting paid to promote something and they get angry about that. So I think as this social, I guess, landscape matures, brands are going to have to step up their game and really say, okay, how do we really connect, right? How do we really tell the story in a way where people like, you know, like yourself, Brian, want to connect?
I want to go ahead and build on that, though, and I want to hear from both points of view, because I think what you just said, Brian, and what you just said, Saba, is a byproduct of where social media is today from a consumer's mindset. So I'm with you, Brian. I don't go into Snapchat to follow brands or to see what brands post. I don't. And I'll be the first to say, as a brand marketer, as someone who speaks about Snapchat at conferences like social media marketing world, I know what brands are doing because I will see what they're doing and then very quickly I'll unfollow. Because what Snapchat is for me is where I go to escape the ads on the right rail or in my newsfeed. I don't go on Snapchat to engage with the brands. And I think that's the mindset of today's consumer. They're so tired of going on to Facebook and seeing an ad, or going on Twitter and having an ad served up to them, that they go on Snapchat, which is almost like the anti-brand, anti-ad network. So for a brand to really scale and see success in Snapchat, and again, I don't think it's just Snapchat. I think it's where social is going to be headed. You're going to have to start putting a personality behind your social presence. And I think, Brian, this is right up your alley with H2H and humanizing your brand's content. You're going to have to put a face and a voice behind your brand, because let's face it, guys, people are not engaged by logos. They're not engaged by products. They're engaged by other people. So if you have influencers and you have your social media manager come from behind the curtain and start talking on Coca-Cola's handle, and you're not just seeing a stock image or a static photo of a Coke bottle, I think that's where you're going to start to put a different spin on where social media is headed. And you're going to start engaging those that up to this point are like, you know what? I'm going to go on Snapchat, but I'm not going to follow Apple. I'm not going to follow Coke.
So I agree on the awareness side. So if this is just sheer brand awareness and that's the goal, I think you guys are dead on. But if we're looking at conversion, which a lot of companies are really putting their marketing departments on the front line to deliver on, mm-hmm. Whether you agree or disagree, it's conversion is one of the biggest KPIs that every marketing department has to deliver on. And my question for you guys is, what's the KPI of conversion for a brand to be on Snapchat? I agree on brand awareness, hands down. I mean, if you can see how many people are viewing your snaps and it keeps going up and up and up, your brand awareness is going up and you're delivering on that value. And being more human is probably going to help you do that. So again, I agree with that. What's the KPI though of the conversion? And that's where I think Snapchat needs to grow. I don't know what the answer is, but I just know that it's not easy for a marketer at a brand to deliver on conversion as much as it could be.
Mm-hmm. So do you see, though, the value from a marketing standpoint on Snapchat, Brian, just to kind of address the elephant in the room?
I see it more as a tool for the for everyone inside of a company to have a Snapchat chat handle and for everyone to show what it's like to work there. And if you were to get your entire workforce on Snapchat and to actually help them raise their personal brands, and in doing so, you're helping to do some employee advocacy at a brand. I think that is absolutely powerful and could really, really kill it. But going back to the brand handle, Saba, I don't disagree with you. I think they need to be more human on their own brand handle. But at the end of the day, the only metric that you can use is views. Again, maybe you guys have more information. You guys know a lot more about the platform on that level than I do. But as far as I can see, there's only views, and if they added one or two more metrics, it could change the game for a marketer and a brand in how they address Snapchat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that in terms of the metrics, I think there are definitely more than views. So if someone takes a screenshot, right, so that's double engagement. If they decide that during your story at any point or at multiple points, they want to slide up and they want to chat or they want to, you know, have a comment, that's a way of engagement. I think checking on the retention of your story and how much they're tapping through that, I think that's another metric. I think one of the things that Snapchat is probably has room to grow in is just being a little bit more visible about their metrics and making it easier for marketers to be able to pull that information through like a web portal. So I do agree that in that sense, there is sort of a barrier or there is a little bit of friction. And if they made that more frictionless, it would make it easier for brand marketers to say, hey, you know, if I can pull a report, okay, this is going to be easier for me to say this week we made 5 days of content and here is what the results were. So I think right now there's a lot of metrics that they can use, but it's very manual. And because the social sphere is, you know, so used to being streamlined by, you know, Hootsuite and, you know, all these different SaaS products that are able to make our lives easier, I think it makes it a little bit of a stretch to say, hey, you know, you're going to have to screenshot this and you're going to have to put it in your own Excel sheet and you're going to have to, you know, draw your own conclusions. I think that's what makes it difficult. But I think in terms of, you know, what are the metrics? I think they're definitely there, right? And one thing that I heard a lot, I was at a Contently event at South By, and there was a panel with Coca-Cola, SoulCycle, and PayPal, and they all were asked about the ROI. And they said, we only measure ROI based on engagement. So shares, comments, things that people are doing, they're actionable items. Likes are not something that they measure. Followers, following, not something they measure. And SoulCycle, who does no paid social content and has a SoulCycle handle on Snapchat, said that they have seen so much success on Snapchat because it is so engaging, right? People are actually consuming their content and it's really influencing, you know, how they make their decisions. And if they do a flash sale, they're seeing those results come back. So
there you go. That's the magic words to me, is if they do a flash sale, they see the results. That's the conversion. And that's the conversion I'm talking about. So the more that we as marketers because you don't want to sell somebody something every day or you're going to turn people off. And so to have that story build up to something like a flash sale and then to see a spike in your sales and see what the difference is from every other day, that to me, that's the use case of Snapchat. Mm-hmm. So, and Snapchat's so new that if we can be capturing all of us those kind of use cases and delivering the lead time of building a story up to a flash sale or whatever the conversion event is, that's it right there. And that's going to be worth it to every single brand.
Brian, we are coming to time on this interview. Before we wrap up, where can folks add you on Snapchat and connect with you on social media?
I am so privileged to be able to actually grab my name on Snapchat. So it's at Brian Kramer. Brian with a Y.
Yes, with a Y.
Kramer with a K.
And, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, which means we're going to have to bring you back onto the show, but you recently came out with a new book called Shareology at the Highest Level. Tell our listeners a little bit about that book and where can they go to pick up a copy?
Thanks, man. Shareology is a book that I wrote as an extension to H2H. H2H is really a 500 or 1,000 foot level book. And Shareology is really more in the trenches. So it's the extension to H2H. It's how sharing powers the human economy. And I actually broke it down inside of the book with equations and ways that that you can actually share on any platform. Although Snapchat wasn't out when I wrote it, or at least it wasn't as prevalent as it is today. But the equation still is the same. I had several hundred interviews with all kinds of people, from executives to social to all kind just about scientists and anthropologists and sociologists and all kinds of people that helped me to deliver on these different equations that help people to share and see success out of those shares. And so it also talks about the sharing economy or the collaborative economy and where we're going with the likes of Uber and Airbnb and how all these different social technologies and physical to digital technologies are all going to be shaped in the future. So I touch upon that as well. Anyway, it can be found on Amazon, just like H2H, and or on my website.
Excellent. Right on. Brian Kramer, you have been great. We're definitely going to have you come back on Social 545 so we can keep talking about Snapchat. And hey, man, thank you so much for joining Saba and I here on the show today.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Big fan of you guys and looking forward to hearing how this turns out. Cheers, guys.
Excellent. Saba, turning it back over to you.
I just want to thank everyone for listening to another episode of Social 545. Don't forget to add yourself to the Snapchat directory, snapchat.directory. We are almost at 10K. It has been less than 3 months, so we're really, really excited. We're going to be coming out with new updates, so definitely stay tuned for that. Add me on Snapchat, Saba Sedilia. You know where to find my snap code. It's all over the interwebs. And make sure to leave us a review if you've listened to our episodes. Make sure to recommend it if you think that one of the episodes was, you know, really intriguing. And definitely make sure to say hi to both of us.
Excellent. All right. Until next time, guys, we will see you on Snapchat. Peace.
You've been listening to Social 545. Be sure to tune in weekly to stay in the know of what's trending in social media.